It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
I was hopeful. I know a lot of people were questioning, but I personally was hopeful about the lawsuit coming out of Texas, especially when you see all the other states jump on and you see the lawmakers jump on and the momentum that it had. Hopeful that potentially the Supreme Court would see that this impacts all the states as the United States of America. But at the end of the day, they held short of that and said there wasn't a proper jurisdiction for them to weigh in. So that's kind of where it started. You see now Justices Alito and Thomas said that they would allow Texas to proceed with the election lawsuit, but they were in favor of it to go forward. Interestingly enough, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett were silent in that decision. I think you know why I say those names, but it really was a line in the sand, and that is gone down now and will not go past go or have any part of it here. Now, the next question becomes what happens next, especially when you see the president on Saturday put a really interesting tweet out there, and he didn't hold anything back, all in capitals, which you know what he does when he says that. He says, "We have just begun to fight." Of course, that could mean many things here, people. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents here. This is Malcolm along with Michael Johns, and it's good to have you with us. And we are talking here, starting with the Supreme Court. Michael, I was hopeful early on. I know I shared that with you. I did a whole program on my daily program about it, thinking that, again, we don't treat these things enough as the United States. And quite frankly, the presidency does impact all the states. So I would think a state would have jurisdiction of that, but they're saying they don't because they can't tell other states how to run their elections, which was another problem I've been talking about. How do we have 50 different election systems when we're supposed to be the United States? And I mentioned that we need to have a complete overhaul in our election process as well. It really comes back to leadership. Yes, that's what it all is about right now, leadership. A lot of people are talking, but not a hell of a lot right. is getting done. What do you say?
Good to be back with you, Malcolm. Firstly, let's put the Supreme Court decision in perspective. It is not a legal defeat for the president.
That's right.
The case wasn't heard. The Supreme Court doesn't hear most cases. When I read the filing by the Texas AG, and which subsequently was, you know, signed on, I think about 18 other states ultimately signed on, the standing issue immediately, crossed my mind. This is a common basis through which cases are dismissed. And, you know, in essence, the strategic deficiency of the complaint and the suit was the fact that you are asking two parts, really. One is that you were asking, you're representing that you were personally affected by this. That so if you were one of the states in which this cheating occurred, you might have a stronger case. Mm-hmm. If you're an unrelated state, their position is, well, what is your standing? And by legal standing, that means you can't just frivolously, I don't want to say there's something frivolous about this, but you can't bring cases in which you or the organization or the governmental entity in which you are affiliated are not personally and directly affected. They want to see that personal and direct impact. And that was a little bit of a stretch from a legal strategy standpoint. And then the second thing is you would have been, even if they accepted the case, this would have been a very atypical Supreme Court case. You were essentially asking them to serve as a jury in what in essence is an alleged criminal conspiracy, a complicated, an immense criminal conspiracy. That's not really the traditional role of courts. They're not hearing, cases of that nature. They're not hearing RICO cases. They're not hearing you know, mob cases. They're not hearing international trafficking. That's not, their role is more the assessment of the constitutional components in decisions that have already been rendered. And because this really jumped through a few assumptions on that, I think that made it a difficult case for them to hear as well.
All right. Well, so let's everybody understand what Michael says there. Number one, it's a procedural. It didn't go through. I mean, this was a procedural, which, as you say, Michael, that a lot of these, that's the hang up. It's there's procedural inefficiencies and things fall. But they never did hear the case. And it wasn't that they said no with Trump. Obviously, right. The media headlines will take it to another place, but that's not at all what they said. Let me read you something, Michael, here to listeners and for you. This is from A.G. Paxton, who I, and I've been speaking to their office, by the way. I want to get Ken Paxton on the call on the show next week here. But I've been speaking to their office. And his assistants and others. And this is what he says in the actual case they put forth here. It says this, and this would be my argument as well, Michael. Trust in the integrity of our election processes is sacrosanct and binds our citizenry and the states in this union together. Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin destroyed that trust and compromised the security integrity of the 2020 election. The states violated statutes enacted by their duly elected legislatures, thereby violating the Constitution. By ignoring both state and federal law, these states have not only tainted the integrity of their own citizens' vote, but of Texas and every other state that held lawful elections. This was General Paxton again, and he ends with, their failure to abide by the rule of law cast a dark shadow of doubt over the outcome of the entire election. We now ask that the Supreme Court step in to correct this egregious error. Now, and they get into things about the pandemic and things that they did, all these unprecedented steps to change the election rules at the last minute, and all where a lot of the crime came from, what I called insurance policies. You remember weeks ago, Michael, the fact that the opposing, the far left were taking out all these insurance policies to take this election over, and they succeeded in that realm. But based on the integrity of the and the sacrosanct that binds our citizenry in the states, I think that's an argument that.
Well, that's what I'm encouraging people and particularly Trump supporters not to do. Do not the Supreme Court may agree with every word in that lawsuit. This is not a rendering of judgment on the facts that are in there. In fact, the strongest contribution that was made in the filing of this suit is the fact that you've got a very compelling and very lengthy document that documents all of the alleged criminality in multiple key swing states. It does not get into the Smartmatic or Dominion systems. Those are a separate issue. But as it relates to, you know, the poll watchers, as it relates to these ballots arriving, as it relates to a lack of signature comparison, all of those issues are incredibly well documented. So if you're looking for a good summary of, gee, how if you're alleging, as the media are, hey, there was no fraud in this election. Well, here's an extraordinary lengthy document that is almost all evidence-based and in large part based on affidavits. And I know we mentioned this previously, but, you know, on a federal affidavit, misrepresenting a fact on a federal affidavit is, I think, a 5-year statutory minimum prison sentence. So for these individuals to go out and make these allegations in these affidavits, you know, really, to be fair, and especially given that they're not really political people, that they don't have a direct impact or direct benefit from seeing this go one way or another, you really have to read these things, giving them the benefit of the doubt as they're true, as them being truthful, and they all line up. There's no real inconsistencies in any of the affidavits.
Yeah, terrific point you make there. That and again, hopefully I can get. I want to talk to Paxton directly, but your point is well taken. That it wasn't a futile exercise, Michael. There was some value to get in what happened and to bring it up there. I still question again, the fact that we are a country here and where our election laws are all different in every state, and we are all impacted, clearly. You're impacted in Texas, you're impacted in the Midwest, you're impacted everywhere in our country with who's going to be president. But again, that's just me looking at it here, and not the way they ruled, clearly. We're now running into a wall here, Michael. Let's step back a minute now from the Supreme Court. Let's leave that over there to the side, please. And let's take a look at, if you will with me, the entire where we're at now and talking about leadership. Right now, people, I get the sense from a lot of people, there are people becoming unglued. There's a lot of fright and a lot of sadness and depression in our country for a lot of reasons. The election and COVID are two of the big reasons. What happens next now is we start to look here. We're talking about the lack of leadership, something you and I talk about all the time, and within the even the Republican Party as a whole. You got the president that puts out a tweet, says we've only begun to fight. We're running out of, as they say, runway room now, as they call it here, with this whole thing, and the electors are now ready to meet and all that. You pointed out to me a couple of times something very interesting, and I want to throw it on the Barbie a moment for everybody to enjoy. And I love this when you say this. You say, hey, wait a minute now. None of this stuff is really set in stone. Let's be clear. And you've even said to me, not even January 20th is set in stone, Malcolm. You said, well, you know, when the evidence comes out and the truth comes out and the truth prevails and we look at this in the light of day, well, at that point, it is what it is. And if that's a provable case, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. That leaves us set up. What I said to you back was that would be a constitutional crisis in our nation if it happens after the 20th or even soon there, close to it. What do you think of all this now, Michael, when we look at this in the big picture?
So the point I've made, which I think is borne out, was that the safe harbor date which was held out as being, you know, a hardened date that couldn't be violated, that clearly we blew right through that because the Constitution doesn't provide for that. Federal statute does, but those federal statutes don't account for these set of circumstances where these elections are in dispute, these outcomes are in dispute, and where allegations are being made. So there was no pushback challenge on the safe harbor date. Now we're going to have tomorrow, in all probability, the Electoral College formally bestow president-elect on Biden, but these electors are allowed to cast protest votes, and state legislatures, as facts become available, are able to redirect electors at any future point. January 20 is a hardened date. There needs to be a president sworn in and inaugurated on that date. But my position is that there's no statute of limitations on unearthing facts and retroactive remedy. So, and if you think about it, what would the alternative to that even be? I mean, it's not like it's, you know, my legal philosophy versus some other legal philosophy. I don't think anyone is out there arguing that if we were able to demonstrate before state legislatures that these electors were wrongly appointed in Biden's favor, that there wouldn't be a retroactive remedy. You can't leave a president in power who did not receive 270 electoral college votes.
Let's play that out a moment. Let's say May or June, this all comes out in a big way in the public square, and what happens is what you just said happens. Where does that put us as a country? Now he's got his whole cabinet, he's got his whole administration in play, he's got all of his levers of power in play. I mean, that is a constitution. What would happen?
Well, what would happen would, you know, this would obviously be, it would go to the state legislatures, they would reallocate electors, and it would be obviously immediately challenged by Democrats. It would go to the Supreme Court. But it's very difficult to imagine given that the Constitution accounts for only one entity that's responsible for the designation of these electors, and that's the state legislature. So I think it's inconceivable to think that the Supreme Court would not yield to their decision, particularly if facts had emerged that were heard, which is why my position on this all along has been, don't put too much focus on these cases. You got courts that are, firstly, they're very activist. I mean, these district courts were appoint it. We're elected Democrats. Now we got Obama appointees hearing them, and to ask a Supreme Court of the United States to basically interpret facts as opposed to constitutional principles sort of reflects a misunderstanding of what the Supreme Court actually does, because all of those facts as alleged in that fair lawsuit, in my judgment, are true. But you would be essentially asking the Supreme Court to kind of validate that, which would empower defendants to provide counter testimony and all of those things.
All right. You just gave me a lot of fuel. You just really got me really a lot of fuel engaged here. And, you know, the right, we always talk about the fact that the right always acquiesces to the left, and they always say, okay, we'll just go along to get along. And at these very moments, they always do it unequivocally. I mean, but in all cases. But let's dial this back now, Michael. You take a look at the last 4 years, and let's just take a look at the drumbeat and the war drums that were playing from the deep jungles of the political boardrooms, and get Trump. Russia collusion. You had all kinds of really crazy stories coming out of that dossier and some other pretty wild stories that wouldn't be fit for a late night comic to discuss. And it was outraged and propagated and promoted and pushed and jammed down our throats for all that time before they went over to all the other charades, the Ukrainian phone call, the 25th Amendment, and every other damn thing they could do. Having said that, Michael, now you got me thinking. Now the right. So then I say, okay, so let's say, just hold on a minute. The election happens. 20th becomes the Biden presidency, as we say, Michael. The cabinet comes in place, the whole administration, everything changes over. The levers in Washington, you can hear that giant sucking sound coming from the deep jungles there. It's like the levers of power. You just hear that happen, Michael. And then here we got the new administration in play. Right. And now with all that said, and let's say Biden's there, and I have to say, now listen to me. All these Republican operatives, Michael, all just about across the board, about all of them, including all the political people, but all of the operatives as well, and all these agencies. Well, you've got to do the right thing. Do the best for America. You know you're going to hear this a million times. Do the best for America. Shut up and sit down. You're being a pain in the ass on the back of the class there. I mean, just do the best for America. Push this thing along here. He is the president now. You got to suck it up and deal with it. You come back in 2022 and 2024 and knock it off. Right. You know that's going to happen a million times over. And here's what I'd say. Baloney, BS. We're gonna ears, Michael.
You turn that right around on them. The best for America, and I would like to hear the alternative view on this, is to ensure election integrity. It's at the core of our Constitution and the rule of law in this country. Once we've set a precedent that a president of the United States can fraudulently rig state elections based on acts of criminality as alleged and be sworn in and then not be challenged on those issues, we've surrendered the Constitution, we've surrendered the rule of law, and we've surrendered any sensibility. And the ramifications of that are widespread, one of which is that we have long held that this is a unique country among the world, that our system of democracy is cherished, that hundreds of thousands have died for the preservation of this union and this system of government. Once you have a suspension of that, and we sort of say, well, in this particular case, because we kind of hate Trump because he's mean and he sends mean tweets and he has to go, we have reached a point where that system has been forever compromised. Mm-hmm. You can't put the toothpaste back in the bottle. Yeah. And that's my concern about this, because I am not hearing from anyone looking at this disputing the facts on our side. And what I am hearing is a lot of silence among individuals who should be leading on this issue and aren't, simply because they're concerned about political blowback and pushback and media criticism and things like that. Well, I'm sorry, but if those are the things, if that's where your head's at, you firstly are not a leader, and this might not even be the right profession for you. We need people who are going to be standing boldly and strongly, because if you can't defend the Constitution on an issue of this magnitude, we certainly can't trust you on issues of lesser magnitude.
If we have real conviction, I mean, does every bone in your body indicate to you that there were so many improprieties with this election and this whole thing about stop the steal and the movement? And we see the marches yesterday in Washington and all of this. Do you have anything playing against you that say this election was fair? Do you think this election was at all fair, or is it
No.
Do we totally believe this was a questionable election?
There's a few schools of thought here. I think I identified maybe four of them. One is you have this media position, which I think they're even moving away from. You know, this was like the Twitter position where you couldn't even tweet that there was any, even one incident of fraud in the country, right? It was a hardened position. There has been no fraud in the history of the country. There will be no fraud. There is no fraud. There never will be fraud. That was an incredibly widely held position in media, social media, and on those on the hard left, in places like the Brennan Center, which is what they've relied on for this, which itself is a very partisan institute run by a former Clinton speechwriter. Then you move forward and you sort of say, well, there are those people who say, well, there was some fraud, and there's fraud in every election. Some of the foreign media I talk with sort of represent this, but it wasn't enough to really affect the impact of the election. That's a second school of thought. There's a third school of thought that I put myself into that I say, this is the magnitude of fraud that's been presented here in the evidence goes into the millions of votes that were affected in key crucial states, and certainly raises very legitimate questions about the outcome of those states. And we need to sort of get to the bottom of all these things and take these affidavits seriously and investigate this. And then there's a fourth category, which is kind of the most hardened Trump loyalists, who I really respect and appreciate, who say, you know, sort of in a country of 330 million, Trump had 600 million votes and, won every electoral college vote. All right. So that's kind of the spectrum of thinking on this. Mm. And I knew, and we've talked about it, that these issues become difficult to sustain because you sustain political momentum based on victories and winning, or the prospect of winning. And, so my position on this still today is I'm really not particularly fazed by the Supreme Court ruling and their unwillingness to hear the case. I would have been surprised if they did hear it. I can't think of a case similar that they would have heard. I'm not even sure strategically if it was the best decision. I think the focus has to be on these state legislatures. Really.
Well, let me go there with you now. I did receive a report, and I want to share with you, Michael, here. And what I understand from Giuliani is that Giuliani and the legal team, they are retooling these lawsuits. They reported on this, and I remember I got that message in. In fact, they say here, we move immediately, seamlessly to plan B, which is to bring lawsuits now in each one of the states. We had them ready. They're just a version of the one that was brought in the Supreme Court. So he's talking about the president made the decision. And this was Giuliani was speaking about this, and this was just shared out there. And so now they're talking about retooling them with other states and stuff. What do you think about that?
That's still a legal approach. And I think the legal approach is worth pursuing because these are clear violations of law. I think there also needs to be more. There need to be prosecutions mm-hmm. in these for the purposes mm-hmm. of setting some sort of accountability and ensuring we don't get this stuff again.
Yeah,
it's been none of that so far. FBI and DOJ completely missing in action on this to this day, mm-hmm. And they would be the logical enforcement agency. So yeah, I think that's I think the lawsuits are good ideas. I also right. think, you know, this idea of getting state legislatures to authorize and to agree to have signature comparisons. That's the gold standard, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we had signature comparisons mm-hmm. in these six or yep. eight key swing states, yeah. that I would be complete. And if we did signature comparisons and somehow Trump came out still short of 270, I would go, wow. I'm surprised. I guess I would say I'm surprised, but I would be have total confidence in the outcome.
100%. 100%. Yeah, perfectly said.
You know,
yeah.
And why are we, why, what is the argument against doing that? There's only one that you can think of, and that is you're afraid. You know damn well what the outcome's going to be if you do that.
That is so good, John, that you share that right there. That, I mean, that's the truth right there. Oh, that tells you we're just really looking for the God's honest truth. And the key to this, Michael, is we should never give up. But let me share with you also, Giuliani. Listen to this now. This is interesting. He says this. Rudy Giuliani, the president's attorney, if the state doesn't have standing, which is what the Supreme Court said, Michael, right? Surely the president of the United States does have standing. And certainly the electors in the states have standing. So they will be bringing those very cases right in those courts starting today. And this is what he released. Julie, this is all brand new information I'm sharing with you right now. And let's see what excuse they can. And then he says, and let's see what excuse they can try to use to avoid having a hearing. Because you know what he says? He says it's outrageous. He said the American
people.
They're
going to kick it back to circuit courts.
You think so?
Yeah, because you haven't litigated the underlying facts.
That's what he's saying here.
You know these facts are accurate.
Yeah.
I believe they're accurate.
Yeah.
But you're asking a Supreme Court now to hear testimony from both sides and determine the factual accuracy of the actual allegations. Those aren't constitutional principles. Those are matters of legal fact. And that's why we have a lower court system for that.
I mean, this is crazy. You're right, though. He says here not a single court decision has had a hearing yet, Giuliani went on to say. They haven't heard from a single witness. They haven't looked at a single tape. They haven't listened to a single recording. I mean, any of the affidavits, any of the information, what you've referenced, all this evidence, so to speak. And that's their argument. So you're probably right. It would probably be pushed back to that. And then you'd have.
That's okay, though.
Exactly.
That's okay.
Exactly. Right. That's what has to happen. Right. Whatever has to happen has to happen.
Well, I think we also just have a little more confidence in the Supreme Court at this point than we do some of these circuit courts. And but I just will tell you, I can't. I'm just trying to think if there's been any comparable case that has involved that component of the law in the Supreme Court. You know, you hear that usually as it relates to a constitutional principle. But not, that'd be a very atypical case to be heard by the Supreme Court without going through a circuit court process.
All right. So let me throw this quandary at you that I want to talk about after the pause with Michael and all of our listeners here. And we're talking about state legislatures. Let me touch on that. Here's the quandary I want to throw at everybody here. Now, all of these kinds of states, a lot of these swing states we're talking about and where the rubber meets the road, the one thing to remember that really isn't talked about enough is that the state legislatures are by and far and large are GOP, are Republican. They're controlled by that, which is very interesting, people, that you've got this sort of, it really is a split government all the way through, not just at the top, but all at the state level as well, because then you've got these Marxist mayors and Marxist governors. But the state legislatures, and you got to remember this, they are the ones responsible to ensure that the elections are done lawfully and absolutely fairly. That's their responsibility. I mean, 100% their responsibility. So here's the quandary I throw out that I want to get Michael's thoughts on, too, after the pause is, I wonder this, people, could the state legislatures take a stand? Could they, you know, they're, again, fair, what's fair, lawful? That's their goal. That's their responsibility. If they're in their heart, if they have the evidence, if they feel that this thing has been jostled from the truth and they want to, you know, present their case, could they possibly turn on some of this? I mean, it would be unprecedented. But we've had some disputes before, but they've been more or less just posturing, nothing to this level. But what do you think about that, people? Could that be a moment where the state legislature, because it really is in the GOP's hands. I mean, maybe you don't want to hear that. Again, it goes against the grain. It is unprecedented. But then again, isn't this whole damn race unprecedented? And, you know, then say, well, the left will be in a civil war. Well, we're headed there anyways at this point, are we now? A revolutionary moment in America. Something to think about here. Anyways, as we pause here, let me remind everybody here that we're with you every Sunday here. You catch this show right there in the morning, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., right after Viewpoint this Sunday. 2 great hours of talk radio excellence. So catch us Sunday mornings, 10 to noon for those 2 hours. The second hour is a Viewpoint Presents with Michael Johns and yours truly. And we love doing this program with you. Just it's very special to be able to talk to the American people in this way, and we so appreciate you being part of all of this. So 10 to 12, and then later in the day, there's an encore, by the way, on America Out Loud Talk Radio. If you're out for a Sunday brunch or something, we excuse you if that happens. You can catch us later in the day, 6 to 8 on Sundays on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can also catch us on demand. We have a great audience on demand, and all that's available on every podcast unit, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, all the way down the line, all of them. And more so right at the top of AmericaOutLoud.com. Sunday afternoons, just after 2 p.m., you'll see it all up there, both hours. And we appreciate you being part of the mission here and getting the word out there for what we're trying to do here. We'll take a pause here. We'll be back with more Viewpoint Presents in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. Well, AmericaOutLoud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. Join us. We're in this together, and we consider you part of our family in our crusade to share the news, commentary, and agenda that can lead America back again. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. And I throw that puzzle out there, Michael, before the break, which is not something a lot of people are talking about, but with the GOP-run state legislatures and all, and we're talking about their responsibility, and I'm not making this up, is to ensure that the elections are done lawfully and fairly. Now, those states, I would argue, and I think you would agree with that, they've not been done lawfully or fairly. And in fact, right. the states changed the rules. So talk to me, brother. So what would happen? And well, is it doable?
You're going to test my political. Well, firstly, I'm just thinking, you know, I keep coming back to the Tea Party movement. But Paxton, boy, that was a quintessential Tea Party candidate. Glad we got him in there. And he's been leading a cause on this. And now when you go down to this state legislature and you look at the victories that we have, when I cite that 1,000 that we had against Obama, these were races that didn't get a lot of attention. But now you can see how crucially important they are. So if I go through the, if I think about kind of the states that are most contested, I mean, I guess Georgia we could start with. That's Republican state house, Republican state senate. Pennsylvania, very progressive, far left governor and administration, but Republican state house, Republican state senate. You look at Wisconsin, Republican state house, Republican state senate. So, you know, and Nevada, of course, is not. I think they're both in Democrat hands, but those were the mail-in ballots for call. And that, to me, is a much more straightforward issue. I mean, thousands of ballots that were illegally cast.
Hustled.
And that's only six electoral votes, by the way. Arizona, of course, Republican state house and Republican state senate. A shout out to Kelly Ward, who I think is one of the best state GOP leaders, who is the running the Republican Party in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. And she has been relentless in this fight. So has the Republican Party in Georgia, which is interesting, given the fact that the governor has dodged this issue. But I think that's the other, you remarked on my point about the absurdity of opposing the signature comparisons, which would be a little more laborious. But think about the absurdity of opposing the inspections of these Dominion systems. What is the precise argument against that? So we have affidavits signed, including by people who've had employment affiliations and consulting affiliations with Dominion, that contend that the system was used for the purposes of manipulating votes. We know we have, I cannot to this date find an example where Dominion system has been used in a state or any global election where there hasn't been that allegation. And we know it's got a lot of findings that have been very troublesome. What's the argument against allowing cybersecurity experts to inspect these systems exactly?
Yeah. And you've said that right along, Michael.
Same thing. The only reason you oppose it is you're afraid of what they're going to find.
You're hiding something. Absolutely. You know, Michael, I had up front in the hour, I wanted to share with you, I hadn't had a chance, Mary Fanning, who's been out there, who wrote a book on this electronic cyber warfare. A very fascinating conversation with her. I never spoke to her before in the first hour there. But she wrote about this. What is fascinating to me, which I did not know this, she wrote about this early in the year. Her book was published, I think, July or August, about what it was going to take place in the cyber warfare. And I didn't know that, Michael. And she wrote about this whole thing and they reference it as, you know, Hammer scorecard. It's very controversial. But back to the Dominion machines and the changing of votes and all of that, what seemed to happen that night on the 3rd and the 4th. There could be more to this story. It seems like it's really out there, but the more you look at a lot of the evidence and what people are saying, what really happened in real time, it may not be so out there, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's got to be inspected. And you've got, as you correctly say, a number of credible people come forward with from the inside who say this was, you know, essentially developed within our intelligence services for the purposes of manipulating foreign elections and then deployed in the U.S. Well, that's an incredible allegation. And I don't want to render any judgment on it, but why would we not, you know, why should that not be taken seriously? I don't think it's the key. Look, a big part of this right now, and I know we got a lot of people out there that are involved listening who want to be doing the right thing. I think the pressure right now, firstly, it's don't give up. That's the president's message yesterday. That's the message of a huge gathering in D.C. calling for that. That's the message of a lot of Republican state legislators and governors and attorney general. I mean, you're not alone, right? So this is not, don't let media bias convince you that A, this is over, or B, that it's hopeless, or C, that there's anything outside of the norm in doing this. As I just pointed out, the extreme and irrational position in this debate are those that are intervening to prohibit the sort of audits and assessments that are necessary to get to the bottom of whether this was or was not a free and fair election. Those are the people that need to be targeted. Some of them are Republicans, and we should remember their names, because these are not the people we need representing this country or this party in Washington or on state levels. You know, burden has to be on ensuring the fairness of this election. And I think I mentioned this to you, I can't recall in like 30 plus years of political involvement where I'm sure I've been involved in one and more recently dozens of races in every election cycle ever questioning the result of an election until this year. So this is not something, this is not whining, this is not complaining, this is not, gee, my blind loyalty to Trump. I'm telling you, I don't care who the candidate was, this evidence is compelling and it suggests, you know, criminal conspiracy because it's multifaceted, it's pre-planned, it appears coordinated, and it also appears to have been effective.
I'm also thinking how different things might have been had we had the full support of Brian Kemp and Doug Ducey, because it really what we needed here is momentum and a state or two to be changed, questioned big time, and then changed based on the evidence of truth. Let me read to you the president's tweet here that was sent out yesterday, Michael, fascinating. He said, and never one to mix his words, President Trump says, "Who is a worse governor, at Brian Kemp, Georgia, or Doug Ducey of Arizona? These are two rhino Republicans who fought against me, the Republican Party, harder than any Democrat. They allowed states that I won easily to be stolen. Never forget them. Vote them out of office." So president put it right out there. We're talking about what is behind Kemp and Georgie, do you think? I'm really puzzled by this, Kemp, what's happening. I don't have the answer. Do you have the answer?
The it's puzzling to me. Let's just start with Kemp, because why, as I raised with you before, is he not leading the charge to get these Dominion systems pulled out of the state before this January 5 runoff and these two nationally critically important Senate runoff elections? And again, where is our media? And I'm not even just talking about the, you know, I'm not even talking about the mainstream media anymore. Where's the conservative media on this? You know, I mean, they should be demanding answers on this question of how can you possibly go in to this election knowing what we know about this system, using that same system? They paid $107 million to Dominion to acquire these systems. Sidney Powell, if I don't believe I'm misrepresenting this, alleges that there were kickbacks involved in the acquisition of these systems, but that hasn't been even alleged beyond rhetoric. It's, there's no, hopefully the FBI is looking at that. I think you got to realize 2,000 individual jurisdictions made the decision to put this system in place. And I think every person who was involved in that decision-making needs to be a subject of criminal inquiry at this point. Because there is simply no way you would look at all of the election and voting system options available, of which there are certainly dozens, if not hundreds. And in a moment when, remember, Malcolm, we were being warned by the Democrats about the risk of cyber hacking, about not taking this seriously enough, right? Mm-hmm. Russia was going to hack and alter these. All right. So in this period, you go out, you look at all the available options, and you say this Dominion system and these Smartmatic components, this is the best option we have available. And these things weren't cheap. So it's not, I can't for the life of me consider any innocuous explanation as to why you would select this system. Mm-hmm. The most damning explanation is that there were kickbacks involved. Second to that, it's susceptible to voter manipulation. What's the benign explanation? Why are these people not being questioned? Mm-hmm. Why are all these systems not being seized?
So, Michael, two big takeaways here that I want to slow it down just a second. So let's be sure, because this is really very important. Two big takeaways, like we're saying here. Number one, why are we not questioning what is the harm? All right, so matching signatures up. Clearly, like you said, if that is done in all those states and it shows a different outcome, we're good with that. Whatever the outcome and the might and the truthfulness and fear of the American people. And I just want everybody to be clear, I'm very good with that. And I know you are as well. We're just really looking for fair and truthful here. That's it. We're not looking for any shenanigans.
It's not a recount. It's not a recount like in Georgia when you go and count it the same way you counted it the first place. That wasn't what we were looking for.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. Yeah. And so, but here's the two big, this is huge. I mean, just think, I mean, my mind is right here. So why wouldn't we do these two things, my fellow Americans? One, say, okay, all you states, let's stop. Stop the parade right now, please. And let's just please check the signatures out in all these states. That's a reasonable request here. And then that'll tell you what's really honorable and what's not honorable. Then dead people can't vote. You can't send 100 ballots in per person. You can't do all kinds of funny business and steal anything because it's got to be proven. And see, that's what they've been pushing that narrative for years now. The far left has let everybody vote and illegal people vote, dead people vote, anybody votes. You drop them from planes. They're fine with all of that stuff. But the second big takeaway, Michael, is this. again, why would you not have the equipment completely verified, testified, looked over, analyzed to see that what was really happening here? Why wouldn't every governor, every state legislature, why wouldn't every part of the cog in the wheel stop and say, let's do these two things. Let's get our representative republic right, our representative democracy republic right. Let's get it right. Let's make sure the people's voice is heard. Why wouldn't we do those things, Michael? So that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah. And what about the United States Postal Service? How is it possible that we have all of these allegations being made about, you know, ballots that unfilled, that disappear, that subsequently are voted? This is a division of the United States government. Where is the criminal investigation? You know, why are these people not being questioned? I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of ballots nationally that they allegedly misled. Yeah. And I heard the Pennsylvania truck driver who was also a whistleblower who was transporting all of these ballots from Long Island down into central Pennsylvania and then elsewhere, whose truck was stolen. The FBI finally did get around to questioning him. And all of the questioning was, how did you connect with these Republican and pro-Trump individuals questioning the election outcome? How did you end up at the Arlington, Virginia press conference? How did you end up in touch with Trump and Republican attorneys? None of it was related to who put these ballots in there and what happened to the truck. I mean, like the question is all of this suggests, as we've talked about, a Department of Justice that is just taking sides on this issue and many other issues, and it's a continuation of it. And ultimately, it's what you get when you don't take the staffing stuff seriously.
Well, listen, yeah, that's what you get. But Michael, I have spoken out pretty hard and heavy about Attorney General William Barr, haven't I now? I mean, he's a problem. And what's happening in that Justice Department is a problem.
Well,
so
why would you not, when he, if you hear, you know, I understand, I've thought this through a little bit, but, you know, so you're over 4 weeks past the election, allegations of fraud emerged within 24 hours. They were in affidavits quickly within days. 4 weeks later, he basically says to Trump, well, we really haven't really started looking at this yet. And then he says that to the Associated Press. He takes time to talk to the Associated Press, but not to have his department interview these individuals involved in federal electoral law. I think you terminate that guy right on the spot. I mean, and you know, if there's an issue, I don't even care. If there's no AG for the rest of this administration, then there's no AG, or you put some acting person in, whatever. But, you know, like, where is the accountability? I mean, this is, can you get a more serious allegation criminally than a conspiracy to alter an election? You're over 4 weeks past it, and we're now longer than that. And they really still haven't lifted any serious finger to investigate even the obvious, demonstrable facts of people who risked 5 years in prison to sign affidavits alleging what they witnessed. Okay. I mean, we've talked about this deep state is no conspiracy. I mean, we've allowed this permanent government to emerge. They have all kinds of personal interests that are not in line with the country's interests. They've never respected or been accountable to this president. And sadly, the president's four-year unwillingness to clear out these departments and agencies, still filled with Obama holdovers, vacancies, Republicans who badmouth him literally anonymously while he's hospitalized with COVID, that kind of evilness, anonymous, who sits there at the right hand of the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, responsible for many of our immigration and border security issues, undermining the agenda for 4 years. This will sadly be the real legacy if Trump is not somehow resolved this before January 20th.
It's
You can't do it alone. I've said that about the conservative movement, and it sure is true about a president. It takes an army of people committed to a vision, because you're going to get pushback from Congress. You know you're going to get pushback from the media. You know you're going to get pushback from all the lobbyists and the K Street types. Mm-hmm. You need at least to have your own people aligned with your agenda. And you know what? He's never had that.
Well, the challenge with Trump, and I hear everything you just say, Trump was not an invited guest into Washington, D.C. He was not an invited guest.
He was invited by the people, though. That's invited by 63 million people invited him.
That's exactly it. But he was not invited by the...
That's a lot of invitations.
But he was
it's a lot of stenography.
He was not invited by the establishment players, though we agree on that, buddy, I'm sure. And his whole notion of draining the swamp, he didn't go far enough, Michael, with removing those positions and all of that. You're right. You're 100% right. And personnel is a big deal. As you say, you talk all the time. It's big. And that's been a failure, really. That would be a failure of
it's
leadership.
An F.
Yeah.
You got to give him an F. You have to give him an F on it.
It's been very sad.
I don't know if we're going to get another shot in our lifetimes to do what we had the opportunity to do for the 4 years.
Wow.
And you got to separate these 4 years in almost two components, because for the first two, there were literally no excuses. We had the House and Senate.
Yeah.
To get through 2 years of an administration and not have $1 allocated to the border wall, and we're still funding Planned Parenthood at $500 million.
Yeah.
The fire alarm should be going on. And people like me were in a difficult situation. I'm talking openly, a little more openly and honestly now, because my position has always been to defend the president and to understand the complexities of these problems, which weren't all of his design.
Right.
But, you know, ultimately, who is accountable for the personnel?
Well,
I mean, when you delegate it, you're sort of acknowledging that maybe it's not all that important to you. And this might get to one of the few deficiencies that this man has, is I think his history before going to D.C. was one of being able to solve anything and everything, including any issues related to subordinates in his private sector career. But that's not the way the government works. It's complicated. There's so many cogs that can be put in the wheel. There's so many legal complexities. As I told you, I mean, even these attorneys who were arguing his cases for the U.S. government in court didn't seem to agree with them. You could just see it throughout. You'd see the lack of passion. You could see the internal arguments, all the leaks. The impeachment process itself was a product of personnel.
So when you said, well, we may not have another shot at this thing, do you really believe we may not have another shot if Biden pulls off this coup here?
Yeah, I'm not really seeing any terrible uprising in the country as it relates to credible allegations of a rigged presidential election. So if I'm on the other side and I'm in the business of rigging presidential elections for Democrats,
right,
I'm saying all lights are green. Nobody cares. Let's double down on this stuff. These things we did in a few cities, let's see if we do them in 10 more next time. Nobody's been even cited, accountable. No firings, no terminations. Yeah, nobody, Dominion, yeah, they won't even let them look at the systems. Let's go acquire some more of that stuff. I just think the mess, which is one of the reasons I'm trying to take this seriously, and I think many others are as well, is that it's not just a question of who's the president, but it's also like you got to resolve these things, or that's going to be the status quo. I mean, you can't come up in 2002 and say now we want to get rid of these systems after we were just denied opportunities to even have them forensically inspected.
Well, I think if we could take and analyze the talk we just had and put this in a few steps, I think we just laid out some important ones in the last 50 minutes here that play to what we're speaking about. Let's talk about Trump and where he is right now and what in our time here, Michael, what happens next. Now, what if the president this next week here wakes up one morning, decides to make a real stand and begin to let a lot of people go, like A.G. Barr and others we talked about? And what if he then gets to it? You know, you remember the old fireside chats. I referenced that up front in the program earlier. What if maybe this is time for a fireside chat with the American people about what happened and what needs to happen? But again, how do we get there when he's not taken serious from a good part of the country? And how do we ever get there when we're tearing each other apart? And it's like I was talking to John Tobacco up front in the first hour, Michael, about, look what's going on with COVID right now. Yeah, look what's going on with COVID right now. And look how they're tearing everybody apart there. I mean, they've decimated our business community, our small business. People are dying on the vine. I mean, they're taking taken over so much. And that's why you got people like West and Binderman and Rush Limbaugh coming on saying, hey, wait a minute, people, maybe this isn't going to work after all. Things are getting weirder in the nation. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we need to always go back to the point of origin. You know, if you want to understand something, you can't pick it up mid-story. You can't start reading the book halfway through it. The story began in Wuhan under the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. I didn't even mention the more recent uncovering of the fact that there are roughly $400 million of CCP-related investments into the holding company of Dominion Systems, raising a whole other series of questions about foreign interference and the role that China may have had in accessing these systems, as I believe has also been alleged. But I think you go back to China, really, and you start with that. You start with the fact that you have this aggressive, hostile power who was confronted for the first time in decades by Trump. One of the best things he did, it was the right policy to take. They were threatened by it. They were harmed by it. They were contained by it. It completely was derailing their five-year plan and their longer-term plan for economic, geopolitical, and even cultural leadership of the world, military leadership of the world. And you get to the question of the fact that they very consciously let this pandemic leave China, infect the world, and almost certainly with political and economic designs. And that's now the conclusion of consistently cited U.S. intelligence community, which we heard about routinely over the Russia investigation, is now concluded finally with the Director of National Intelligence, that's exactly what happened. And they are still in denial about that. So yeah. I think a lot of this goes back to China and the role that they've played and the magnitude of infiltration they have in this country, which Trump was beginning to weed out. And, you know, I don't think Biden's going to take seriously at all.
And on top of that, the Biden presidency being compromised with China big time. The Sun, what's happened with Hunter, you see the Swalwell story, all of this blown up. China is a bad seed throughout a lot of these stories and potentially what's going to happen next year. Oh, well, listen, and last thoughts here now with you all. I think I'm feeling this much. I feel that we cannot, Michael, you referenced earlier, we cannot give up. This is really a moment. I truly believe now, and just having this talk with you has been very therapeutic for me, I feel cleansed a little bit of some of the political dirt, Michael, and putting it out there in the public square. But I think the fact that we point these things out and then say, you know what, and here's the final message for me. They spent 4 years rubbing our faces into Russia. They've spent 4 years tormenting patriots and conservatives and God-loving Americans everywhere. They spent 4 years terrorizing the administration of Donald Trump. And I got to tell you what, my fellow Americans, with whatever happens next, I suggest this much. I believe we should terrorize them back with the truth now for the next many months and years or however long it takes to take this back. It's either that or you begin to look for another country, which is what these players were telling you about, which we talked up front with Dinesh D'Souza on the program there. But in any event, I rest my case. I think we've had a spectacular conversation here with Michael Johns, and I thank you always. Now, remember, subscribe to us on podcast. Get over to Apple, subscribe on podcast, leave a comment. Let us know what you're doing out there and tell us how we can help get out there and make a difference here. We're here to put up the fight of good and attack evil in every way that we possibly can. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the journey. It's time to get involved and get loud.